Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
Just swinging in the breeze.
Big O! Showtime!
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a limousine tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the gas, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a Lincoln bath. For the strolling, go direct to DLNGS.org. And I see channels and Linux link down there. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 922 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
How's it going, man? I'm willing to do a review of the new Iron Maiden album if you want.
Absolutely. As soon as I introduce our other guest, Joe, our host, not guest, Joe.
Hello, how's it going?
And you can roll right into that review, but expect to be interrupted by Joel when he gets
no
back
problem.
On.
Iron Maiden came out with their latest studio album. It's called Senjutsu. It's a double album. Supposedly they did it back in 2020. It's been in the can, and it's a really great album. First CD is the shorter tracks. You know, there are some longer ones on there, but generally they tend to be shorter, 4 or 5 minute song range. You know, you probably heard a couple of the singles, The Writing on the Wall, Senjutsu, you know, the title track, and also Stratego, which is very reminiscent of like Sun or even Power Slave a little bit. The album is very modern sounding. It doesn't sound like the old Martin Birch albums from the 80s. It's what's his name? The guy who does Joe Bonamassa's albums. The Australian dude, Brendan, what's his name? He's the producer. But he's a really good producer. The album sounds really great. It sounds very modern. You know, Bruce Dickinson sounds amazing on vocals. The whole band sounds excellent. You know, they're still doing the three guitar lineup, so it's a wall sound. You know, and there's a lot of tracks. You know, the Steve Harris songs are like the really longer tracks, you know, 8-9 minutes, which is a good thing. You know, you should be afraid of a longer track. Not everything has to be 3.5 minutes. And it's a good mix of stuff, you know, some slower tracks, some faster tracks, and it's highly recommended. If you're an Iron Maiden fan, definitely go get it. I think this is their highest charting album. I think they got the number one in the UK, and I think they're like number two in the US. So the album's doing really well. You know, when they come around, probably in the springtime next year, if you've never seen them, definitely go see them, because you don't know how long these guys are going to be around for. You know, they're still one of the great bands out there. I say they're a super band. You know, there's not a lot of bands that could, you know, sell a soccer stadium with 80,000 people in it, you know? So, you know, even if you've seen them in the past, definitely go see them again, because we don't know how long these guys are going to be around. They're in their early 60s, you know, that's not old by today's standard, but, you know how that goes, you know, Charlie Watts passing away, you know. So as these guys get older, you know, you're going to see, you know, guys dropping off. And, you know, Maiden's in their early 60s. You know, they start in the late 70s. They're a little younger than the old, you know, 60s and 70s bands. But highly recommended. Great album, you know, great live band. You know, definitely go see them.
Yeah, it's Kevin Shirley was the producer.
Kevin Shirley. He's an excellent producer. He's done a lot of awesome albums. He does all the Joe Bonamassa albums and the Black Country Communion albums, and he's good. He's got a really good, nice, modern sound, you know?
Yeah, so Iron Maiden is still pretty much the same group that it's been since the mid-80s, correct?
Yeah, it's pretty much the 80s guys, plus Yannick Gers, who came in when Adrian Smith left for
right.
A while. So they have three guitarists now, and Steve Harris, you know, he's the bass player. He's also does keyboards now. So all the keyboards on the new album, it's all Steve Harris.
Yeah, it's not too common to see a lot of these older groups. Just there's only one member left.
Yeah, I don't like that. There's even some groups where there's no original members left.
Yeah, it's trying to remember whether Steppenwolf still has
it. It's basically a sanctioned cover band. You know, I think Foreigner's like that. It's like there's no people that you know in the band. It's like, what the fuck's the point? It's just a band touring around with that name, you know?
Yeah, it's Steppenwolf or the Kinks, I think, don't have any original.
Leonard Skinner has one guy, and he had like heart valve replacement surgery. So he had to drop out of the tour. So it's like no original guys. It's like, what's the fucking point, man? It's a bit of a joke at that point, you know?
Uh-huh.
But these guys are still great, you know, and you gotta see them before they go. You know, Alice Cooper's still around. He's in his 70s, man.
Yeah, I've pretty much seen him at least every other year for the past decade or so. I saw him when he was with when he was touring with Iron Maiden. So I've very much enjoyed those shows.
Yeah.
And Motley Crue. And...
Well, I don't know Motley Crue so much now. Vince Neil's kind of a mess right now.
Yeah.
Dude can't even fucking sing, and he weighs about 300 pounds.
Yeah.
Pretty sad.
And they were supposed to have their final tour and never go back to touring again, but here
maybe
we are, right?
Maybe they get Taco Bell to be the sponsor of the tour or something.
Yeah.
Double chalupas for everybody after the concert.
I mean, when I saw them, they weren't bad.
They're okay. But yeah, they're like Kiss. They're on the 13th Farewell Tour.
Yeah, and I saw Def Leppard fairly recently, and Styx. Styx is always puts on a good show.
Dan, it's the Young's not in the band anymore, right?
He
got on the outs with those guys.
Yeah, unfortunately, but they still do. I saw Dennis DeYoung himself, and he's done touring now, apparently. But we'll see. I guess Ozzy still touring? I think he said he was done, but now he's doing another final tour?
Yeah, I think he's going to do one more final tour.
Until the next final tour.
Yeah, so Kiss is doing their final tour.
Yeah, that's kind of unfortunate, but...
Until he needs more money for drugs.
Yes.
This is Kiss's supposedly final tour, isn't it?
15th or 16th, I've lost track.
Are their 15th final tour?
Something like that.
Well, they're doing that residency, aren't they, in Las Vegas?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know
if that counts.
Yeah, I don't know. Def Leppard did one of those recently, too.
Yeah, they're still going. Def Leppard's been touring with, off and on with Styx, and they've been touring with, REO Speedwagon, I think it is.
Well, they were supposed to do a summer tour this year with, like, Motley Crue. Supposed to be Def Leppard, Motley Crue, Joan Jett, and Poison, and then they canceled it. And honestly, out of that line, I would be most into seeing, like, Joan Jett. I've never seen her.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Joan Jett. I would love to see her.
I've seen Def Leppard a few times.
Yeah, she used to come around to the fairgrounds. I remember that. The Allentown Fairgrounds?
I never saw her. I knew someone who was in her band. Like, I was friends with their brother from Staten Island, where I grew up. His brother was in the band. He was the bass player for Joan Jett for a while.
Oh, you know what? Why am I thinking? I know that I think Joan Jett did come around. Now I'm thinking of Pat Benatar, too. I would love to see Pat Benatar. But, yeah, Joan Jett, absolutely.
Yeah. I saw Raspberry Smoke recently. That's a really good band from Atlanta.
Where'd you see them?
The Stone Pony Summer Stage. It was like an outdoor thing down in Asbury Park.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, were you down, like, vacationing in Asbury Park?
No, I just drove down there for the show. It was awesome.
That's like, what, an hour from your house?
No, it's longer than that. It's like two and change.
Two and change, okay. Damn, I haven't been to Asbury Park in 30 years, I think.
Yeah, it used to be a total shithole. Now it's a better shithole. They've made it a little better now.
Well, that's nice. That's good to hear.
Yeah, they pump money in there. You know, the area around the beach is nice, and it's definitely better than it was back in the day.
That's cool. Asbury Park. That was that one of the last beaches before you get to New York?
Yeah, it was the first place you hit going down. And it was honestly the shittiest. It was kind of ghetto-y.
Right.
But, you know, the Stone Pony's been there forever. I've seen a ton of shows in that place. And they have a, an outdoor summer place right next door. And it was maybe, I'd say maybe 2,000-3,000 people. It was a decent crowd.
That's nice. Guess they never got Joel back, huh? You actually got to have a good review there without being interrupted.
Yeah, I mean, it's highly recommended, man. It's an excellent album. If you're a Maiden fan, definitely get it.
And even if you're not, you know, check it out. You might become one.
It's good. It's like the last album was good, The Book of Souls. That was a good album. And this is, I think, a little better. You know, out of the newer Maiden albums, this, Book of Souls, and Brave New World are my favorites. The first one, then, where Bruce Dickinson and Adrian Smith came back in the 2000s. That was a good album.
All right. Oh, I'll tell you what. I've had some issues with a rather large, ubiquitous internet company this week.
GoDaddy.com?
No, larger. But you're in the right alphabet. I was quite surprised because we discovered an anomaly in some of our applications, a specific function, three different function applications, which are triggered by a messaging service. And the way that it works is a what's called a cloud function, which is essentially, instead of running a full-blown application in Kubernetes or whatever, you could do a function, which is almost like that, but it's provided by a service and it runs on demand. Hold on 1 second. Was that you, Joel? Say something. Hello?
Hi. But you're talking to Joel, not me, right?
They got him.
I'm sorry, that was my wife called me. We had a potential incident that had to have a rapid COVID test to be sure, and everything's good. Negative, negative. Anyway, so the cloud function runs on demand as a service, and there's different ways that you can trigger it, and the way that we've been triggering these specific group of cloud functions is through a messaging queue service where it sets up a subscription automatically when you create the cloud function to handle this. So whenever a message goes in onto the service, it automatically gets pushed to the cloud function and executes. So I had picked up a ticket that they wanted to tune the alerting on this thing because it was going off multiple times a day, particularly in the middle of the night and waking up the on-call person for like really no reason at all. And what I found out was about once or twice a day, for some reason, a message would come into the queue and not get acknowledged for like almost 10 minutes. And the way that, after reading the documentation, the way that it appears to work is that when message comes into the queue and the cloud function grabs it, upon invocation of the cloud function, it's supposed to acknowledge the message and then carry on. And so if the cloud function succeeds or fails, the message is acknowledged either way, and it's gone, right? Now, there's a caveat, and of course the caveat applies to us. If you apply the retry feature on the cloud function, it will not acknowledge the message until it apparently succeeds in execution or times out of execution. So the caveat there, they say, is the message will be acknowledged upon invocation unless retries are enabled and the function does not throw an exception. So we're trying to figure out why the message is in some cases exceeding 1 minute and going up to, in a few instances, 12 minutes, but mostly once or twice a day, we see it up there around 8 minutes. Now, this is per function. There's another function that the third function was just enabled like a week ago, and we're seeing this a lot more frequently. So all the metrics that we looked on this thing, we could not match anything up. Doesn't seem to be like an excessive amount of messages. In fact, the message total number goes down during this period. Doesn't seem like we're having problems with spinning up function executors. Because a function is a one-to-one service, so a message comes in, it gets a function applied to it. So for every message that comes in, that spins up a new function, it's only one-to-one. It's a function doesn't handle multiple messages. So we're not seeing a spurt of messages. We're not seeing any failures in our logs. We're not seeing anything in their stack driver that says, wow, this function took 10 minutes to process this message. What we do see are some outliers in the stack trays is like 30, 40 seconds that come up, and it only, and by and large, most of the messages take like 3 or 4 seconds for the function to complete. So we couldn't figure anything out. We opened a ticket with this group, this company's support, and it's been kind of a fiasco. Is what I have to say is, you know, we've read through the documentation, and then they were providing us with, hey, try this. It looks like, first off, they came back and said, it looks like your backlog's too high, and so you gotta implement an exponential back off because you're saturating the system with the pub sub. And I'm like, no, our backlog isn't too high. If you look, our backlog is actually lower in these instances. It's higher in other places. Why is this not causing a problem in those other places if it's a backlog issue? And how do we implement an exponential backoff when that's not how any of this works, according to your documentation? And then they came back and they're like, oh, yeah, you're right. No, you got to implement let's go ahead and implement dead letter. And so that if it is a problem with the message, dead letter will set delivery attempts, and you can see how many times it was attempted to be delivered, and we can go from there. And I'm like, that's not how this works, but okay. You know, I even said to them 3 or 4 times, like, how is that supposed to help us? There's no indication of that happening. And that doesn't seem to be how this works with your documentation. So we're like, all right, finally, we're like, fine, we're going to do it in our staging and development environment. And so we implemented it and we tried to, and they're like, log it, the delivery attempt. So in the function so that we can see whether that keeps going up. So we're logging delivery attempt, but the thing that's happening is it's not there. It's not in the message. And if you read the documentation, it clearly states that when the message is passed to the function processor passes the message to the function, the two fields that you may be interested in, like message ID and publish time, are put into a different location. So that says to me they're not giving you the message. You can't interact directly with PubSub through the function. They're not giving you that functionality. It's through the function, and the function only takes the message and gives you the payload and puts some other event data in the context. So you're not getting the full message. And obviously, we weren't getting delivery attempt, and I went back to them, and I'm like, look, we've enabled this in our staging and development environment. We're not seeing this field. We've logged the entire message and the context that we're getting. It's just not there. I don't think it's supposed to be there. And then they come back to us and they're like, well, we can't see any of this, you know, dead letter, any of this set up in your production environment. And I'm like, I had to go back and I said, okay, I apologize. I should have given you the links directly, because even though I said it's in our staging and production, I mean, staging and development environments, not in our production because we're testing this, maybe I should have gone that extra mile. Like, they couldn't figure that out themselves, but here we are. So I sent links to our staging environment where it's clearly set. I took a screenshot. I circled it on the screenshot that showed exactly where it was set up and all these things. And the max try retries we set to 10, and they responded back. It's like, something doesn't seem right. We're not sure that you implemented it correctly. Why don't you add max retries on there? Set that value. And I was like, come on, are you not reading my tickets? Are you not even looking at what we have set? So we went around with this for like 2 weeks almost, a week and a half with their support going back and forth. And what they were trying to tell us to do did not at all match what their documentation said. And I guess the kicker is when they sent us a link to documentation for something that was completely out of left field, and it was off of one of their developer blogs, and I went to that link, and it didn't take me to what they were, the article that they were sending me to. It took me to the top level of the blog, and we couldn't find that article that they were referencing. And I'll tell you, this is a pretty big company whose main focus when they started was search. And I searched for this damn blog posting, and I couldn't find it. Even through their own service, I couldn't find it. So I was, like, really not pleased with that level of service. But we got on a call with them today, and we got a different ball rolling, and hopefully they're going to be able to redeem themselves in the next couple of days. We implemented some stuff. Honestly, that they had recommended, but we'll see.
Honestly, that sounds like normal support. We don't know what the hell is going on, so let's give them some random things to try. BS that, you know, normally goes on with support.
And, you know, I'm not surprised at that, because I have found, like, throughout my career, even starting way back at the school district, when a company comes out with a piece of technology, if you're an early adopter, all bets are off.
It's especially when it comes to support. I mean, they have, at that point, they have no knowledge base to work with. So they have to randomly guess what's wrong unless they can get a developer involved. And they don't want to, because all the developer is going to do is say, why aren't you taking care of this support? Don't you know your job?
Yeah, I hear you. Because I've run into that time and time again where it's like, this is not what your documentation says. This is not the way it appears to be working. What is going on? And you have to go through so many levels of support before you start to get an answer. And then sometimes it's not even a satisfying answer. It's like, why are you using our technology this way? Because we can, I guess, you know, it's you put it out there. Why can't we use it this way?
Yeah, well, they'll get the answer eventually, but if it's a new service, then, yeah.
It's not that new, but it seems like there's enough newness to it that the team who answered the support didn't seem to be aware of how this other implementation of how that their service, I guess, that they were mainly support for, worked in conjunction with this other service.
You're lucky you didn't get the other support runaround then, where they keep bouncing you back and forth between different teams saying, oh, this is their problem, not ours.
I haven't ever had that situation where they bounce us back. We did have to go to our engineer representative, and say, hey, can you kind of tweak this and escalate it? Because we seem to be getting a runaround, and that's what facilitated the next level of escalation and support that way.
Yeah, sometimes that's all you can do.
There he is, in the background.
Yeah, I went in there to go in, and then I went into the channel, couldn't hear nothing. Then I switched from Plasma on KDE over to Ubuntu, you know, the standard, whatever they call it now, GNOME 3, I guess. And now I can't, well, actually, it wasn't the switch that did that, it was the going in and turning up Mumble For some reason, Mumbo was turned all the way down, and I don't know why.
Was that in the volume control, or did you use
in a volume
pulse,
control.
Pulse volume audio control?
In a volume control, so, yeah. That's because, probably because I used Zoom on it last week.
There you go. How did Zoom work on Linux? Worked well, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it worked pretty well. There was one guy in the conversation that we were having, I couldn't hear, but he was actually using a cell phone to make his internet connection, because a truck hit the tree and took his internet out.
I gotta love it.
Yep. Well, now I gotta get somebody out here to fix my dryer, and of course it's going out now. My son's... he's having a problem with it. And he's like, wants someone out here to fix it now. I'm like, yeah, it's 10 o'clock at night. Almost, well, it's 9 o'clock at night. Nobody's going to be able to come fix it now.
What's wrong with your dryer?
Squealing.
Squealing? Again. That's it? Does it work? It just squeals?
Yeah.
Oil that sucker up.
No, it's probably either the pads or a wheel that's gone out on it again. I say, don't ever buy Samsung dryers.
How long have you had that dryer for?
Not that long when you really think about it.
Is it still under warranty, right?
No. Well, I have a home warranty program so it shouldn't cost me hardly anything to fix it. But this same dryer, we bought it in 2018. And it's had the drum replaced twice, and this problem also fixed before as well. I've never had a dryer that does this. The washer, I can't complain about, but, you know, knock on wood. But the dryer, it's making a squealy noise.
Yeah,
it still dries.
I had to take apart my dryer the other day to get the, to clean out the, lint that was collecting in the inside, beyond the lint trap, and it was blocking up all the holes and stuff, and it was taking like two or three times to run through a dry cycle, and finally I'm like, this is ridiculous. So I had to take the whole thing apart, that whole lint chute thing and everything, and the thing I had to do for this is you have to take the back off, and then you have to unscrew it from the front too to take that chute out of there and get that whole thing out so you can clean it thoroughly. That and down there where the fan is, I had to ungunk that too. I should probably at some point take apart the duct thing that goes to the outside and compress that, and maybe that needs a little bit of cleaning, but it works better now, or just replace it. I mean,
right?
I've had this thing on here since I got the dryer, so about 4 years now.
Yeah, I'm tempted to just go get another dryer just because it's such a pain in the ass.
Come on down here. I got two of them sitting in my garage, Joel.
Yeah. Well, it should be fixable before Friday. But, you know, that's been my son's week. I took the car, got it, the valve, like a oil, I think it's some sort of oil valve that was causing the engine light to go on, and it went on again. Same thing, same code.
Was it free the second time?
I don't know yet. I haven't had a chance to call them because I've been so freaking busy during the day. But that's been my week. That and just minor work stuff, but.
Linux goodness, huh?
Yeah. Some of it, yeah. I've been kind of tracking, and this is something that'd be useful, for people who use Datadog or some sort of other monitoring tool. I guess it depends on, if your web page kind of does what ours does. We have a synthetic test that will periodically every once in a while fail on one step. We're probably going to end up changing it and just making it much simpler. But what happens is our synthetic test will log into the website, does something, and then logs out. All right, just to test and make sure that that component is functional. In production, we do that every 15 minutes, and in non-prods, we do it every hour. Okay, because see, that's kind of where the differences are here. Is our non-prods are more or less like prods, because they're used mostly by our clients for testing. Okay, not much as much by us. Okay, so they get treated not quite as important as production, but as important as something else. You know, if it was our non-prods, we would never monitor them. So, what happens is there's a step in the test where it'll fail, alright, and it's because there's a bug in our automation, that will occasionally not populate something it's looking for. Okay? So, we're probably just gonna simplify the test a little bit. So what happens though is when it hits that step, it just utterly fails and then says the test fails, but then it essentially disconnects it, you know, as in, like, if you just close the web page entirely, close your browser, you know? So then what happens is on our server, it will cause 1 to 2, depends on the OS, it's 2 on Linux machines, 1 on Windows machine, but it'll cause that session to just hang and just sit there and not do anything. So my hope is when we change our test that it'll just be a simple login and log out, which is mostly enough. We're talking about doing like a secondary test where it does a simpler report or something that's not going to fail, to test the, what we want to test is, especially in the non-prods, we want to be able to test, there is a feature in our product where you can download a text file or a PDF file, and production, it's almost always set because we never change production. But when we do a clone of a production environment to a non-prod environment, then the one step in our clone procedure is to change the settings on the page to make sure that function works. And that's also part of our validation, because our clones right now are still manual, probably will be for a while yet. Not as often as it used to be, but often in the past, one of the things that they forgot to do is validate that it properly works. So we need to be able to test that feature as well. So we're looking at another way of testing it, or at least checking for the data in the environment to make sure that it's set up right. So, and then that's been one thing that I've been semi looking at, mostly last week, a little bit this week. This week, my mission's been to try and validate a HashiCorp Vault for 2 of our clients. One of them is a hot mess, and I have to basically we're making sure that everything that's in our key pass is proper in HashiCorp Vault, because the key pass is just a file, and HashiCorp Vault is quite a bit different than that, you know. So I'm most of the way through the one. I'm going to check the other one. The other one shouldn't be too bad because it's a newer client, so they probably never had a key pass, so everything they probably need is in there. I just need to make sure that all the things that we need are in that section of Vault. So, and the big reason for us to move the Vault is we can automate things by calling passwords and stuff out of the Vault. So, that's been my week thus far. That in other business things that happened in the unit, that's going to change some things a little bit for mostly for management, not as much for us. So, and I did find out we actually pulled back from the hiring the tech lead position, so I didn't get told no. But instead of hiring the lead, we're going to hire some more minions. So we are hiring more Linux admins. Well, not Linux admins, just Linux admins, but Linux and Windows. Preferably somebody who actually knows our product, but, you know, we'll see how that works. we do got another new guy starting next week, so I'll start training him. And there you go. All the exciting stuff it is to be a senior admin. Woohoo. Blech. And then I finally got my printer up today, too.
Before I go into that, yeah, you know what, let's roll into the printer thing.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead, go do what you're gonna say.
I say I had the part ordered, and it should have got here last Friday. Well, they sent it I don't know why they sent it from Hebron, Kentucky to Indiana, but they did that. And then in the process of trying to get it to me, late, but, you know, still to me, apparently Amazon lost it. So they did refund me, and I reordered it, and I finally got it today and got it installed right before I went over to church. So it's, I haven't done a full print yet, but I'm going to try it.
What, new hot end?
Yes, new hot end, yeah. Plus, I also used the leveling feature in Marlin.
Auto level? Which,
not auto level, because I don't have the BL Touch yet. All right. But if you use the manual leveling, technically you could probably turn the wheels, but you don't have to. It basically puts on the screen what number it has stored in it, all right? So then you do the same thing with the piece of paper, you know, between the nozzle and the bed. And instead of turning the wheels on the bottom, you just turn the knob on the printer and it raises or lowers.
You change the offset.
Basically, yes. So, it's a little bit more like, it's kind of like what the mesh leveling does. So, but I still have, there is a handy, not STL, but a G code file that I still have around that basically will move the head between the screws. So it goes kind of over where the screws are, in the four corners, and you can still do the manual to fix the wheels. So. But I think I've got it that all set up right with the new head. My first one kind of failed because it did lift off the printer and start scooting around, but I caught it way ahead of time because I was being real careful. And I'm going to do another calibration cube just to make sure it works before I set up the longer print for my joystick bottom. So,
are you going to do an extrusion calibration as well?
I probably don't need to do that because it's the same
probably
hot end.
Probably do. Well, it might be the same hot end, but it's still going to have some differences.
We'll see what the calibration cube looks like. What I've done so far doesn't look like it needs it. So, because I only printed like a very little, like maybe 5-10 layers maybe. The calibration cube only runs in about 20 minutes, so I should be able to better know that. But I did take advantage of the new features in Cura 4.11. I have to remember what they call that, monotropic, here, let me look it up.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
And?
Oh, I'm still looking it up. monotonic ordering is what it's called. So, essentially what it does is it changes, like, the order. It lays down a layer. So, it's supposed supposed to print more, like, smoother. And Chip actually just brought out a video five days ago, so Friday. He actually got it down to where he was printing a cube where the top looks perfect without any ironing. So I'm going to set up my my joystick bottom to use that as well. And oh, and they also did a redesign of Kura, made it a little bit made it look a little better. So monotonic ordering. So turn that on and give it a try.
The new app image available for Kura?
I don't know. Probably. I'm using it on my Surface, but let's see, download for free. Yep, it's a new app image on the Altamaker set. So give that a try and see if it works any better for you. I'm just continually impressed. Kura is getting better with every version. I have used Slicer, which is SLIC3R. That works okay. Typically, I think it produces faster G-code. But there's certain features that it doesn't necessarily have that I wish it did. I have also tried the Prusa version of that, and it's okay. I haven't used it in a while, but one of these days I want to get. I would like to pay to try. And I don't know if it's on Linux or not, but Simplify 3D. That's also a pretty nice slicer, and not open source either. But I'd like to try it. So, and then my other printer I've got up and running, I just wish I can get a heated, bed for that printer, cause it's warping like crazy.
Yeah, I need to get an enclosure for mine so I can properly print, at G.
The little one, I may think about possibly carting it down to the garage and try printing it out in the garage right now since it's still a little bit warm and see if that makes a difference. Now, other tricks I've used with that one is I've also taken like a heat gun or a hairdryer and heated up the bed with that, started the print. And then usually that ends up a little bit better. Cause it's only that little bottom piece that will warp. So it's just the starting point where it warps. The other thing I need to check is see if I can actually turn off the fan, when it's printing those first few layers and then turn it back on, for the part cooling. Cause the Wanho or PowerSpec i3 Mini only has one fan. It doesn't have a fan that blows across the heat sink.
Yeah. But Altamaker Kura automatically does that. The initial fan speed for like the fresh layer is zero, and then it shoots up to whatever you have it set at.
Yep. I've actually played with it before, and I don't know if it's changed in the newer version. But when I've set, because you can turn it, have it completely off, and have it turn on a certain layer. But I'd start it up and that fan would never turn off. So, yeah, it just depends. So one of these days I probably should just, get another, like, get a, either an i3, not an i3 mini, but, like, get a, maybe a resin printer or another, Ender 3 type printer or Creality one. Because the other thing with the i3 mini is finding parts for it is a bitch. Not as open as the Creality printers. Creality printers all day I can find parts for it. In fact, I've got a stash of nozzles already, so I don't need to won't need to buy nozzles probably ever.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I switched to the Creality, just because of how much easier it is to get parts for it.
Yeah, the one how the i3 minis or i3s are probably a little bit better than i3 mini, but not that much better.
Yeah, not that much better.
Yeah, getting certain parts, it's like, you know, like with my, like if I lose the board in my CR10, I know how to replace it, and I've replaced it before. You know, that also might be why I go with, instead of the Creality ones, get the, like an Ender 3 Pro or something like that. Because the case for, you know, the Enders have the control systems usually built into the base of the printer. The Creality ones, they are like separate in its own box.
Was Creality?
It is. It is. It's just a different range of printers they have. And in fact, I think you might have to put more together.
Well, the old Enders had the
right.
Didn't they have the control board on the side?
They were always integrated into it, I thought.
Okay, I don't know. But, I haven't seen an Ender 1.
Yeah, the Ender. Well, I don't know about the Ender 1, but I know the Ender 3 always had it built into it.
Ender 3 V1.
Right, and not a external box like this. Because one of the reasons, now I like the external box and I hate the external box, you know, for different reasons. I like it because it's actually pretty easy to set everything up. It's not, you know, you probably have less dealing with wiring and stuff than you might have on the Enders, although even those are not that bad. But the thing I don't like about it is when you have to,
No, it's the same amount of wiring.
Yeah. Well, with my CR10, it basically just has, like, DIN light connectors on the back, and I just screw like, the wiring harness from the print head into that, and then there's another harness for the control, for the steppers that I just do in. But the bigger problem is the way they have everything set up inside of it. It's really tight. I've taken it apart, took it apart to put the new, BK, SKR board in it. That's what I put, the Big Tree, Tech, SKR, 1.3 is what I put in it, which gave me the silent mode, steppers and all that. Well, the problem is that's mounted on the very top, like as you look at the box from the front, it's on the very top, almost like right behind the, LCD. All right. So, putting that board in is a bitch. It sucks. Cause you literally have to like remove the power supply out of it as well. So it's a hassle. and I always, when I was trying to put that thing in, just trying to get the screw holes lined up and get everything lined up so that, the micro SD slot was all set up and all that was just a royal pain in the ass. So that's one thing. The other thing too is the ribbon cable. When I got it, when it was all stock at the beginning, the LCD panel was not connected to the board. I actually had to open it up at that time too and connect it to the board so I can actually see the LCD. So many people though are like on the, a lot of the printing groups are like, well, just use Octoprint. It's like, well, I don't want to use the Octoprint. I guess it's right for some people, but for me, I just don't, the only thing I ever got a value out of Octoprint was, with a Pi was having the camera on the printer. That's it.
You can use Repetier.
Yeah. Well, that's just connecting a PC to it. But yeah. But it's like, the rest of it, like some people will literally slice their model and stuff right in Octoprint. I don't like to do that. I like to use Courier to slice it. For one. For two, Courier usually does a much better job. Because it does, Octoprint has the Cura engine in it, but it's usually many versions behind actual Cura. Yeah. Same thing. So, yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, the only way, you know, there's other ways to do it, but, you know, Octoprint's just not for me. Creality has their own Wi-Fi based thing too. Honestly though, for 3D printing, cause I have to go and prep the bed anyway, I don't mind walking up to it and dicking with the screen and the dial to start the print. It's not that hard. So, and I do like, other things too. Like, I don't know if I still have like, Resume after power outage. I've never really had, even when I know I did on the stock board, but, in any event, it never worked well for me anyway, so I don't really care that much about that. Usually if the power goes out, I'm like, screw me, screw it, it's done. I'm not gonna bother with it, you know. Just cause it never looks right after a power outage. Yeah, I have actually had one print that had, you know, I don't know if I just tested it by like unplugging it or something, you know. And then plugging it back in to see if it would start back up. And that, it did finish the print, but it just didn't look as good as it normally would if you just started over. But, so, yeah, so maybe I'll, I don't know, maybe at some point down the road I'll save up some cash and, get in another Creality printer or something. I want to either do something with a bigger print deck than the CR10 Mini has, which still is pretty huge. Or CR30s are real, real attractive. I'd love to have one of those. The CR30 for Dan is, instead of a just one build surface, it's essentially a belt. So, as it prints, it'll move the parts it's printed away from the print head, so you can literally print like a sword on the CR30. That's 3 or 4 feet long. Granted, that's a lot of plastic. So I'm not sure if I want that or not, because CR30s are, I think they're, what, $800 if I remember right?
I don't imagine that they're cheap.
No, they're not.
And they, instead of printing, you know, flat, they kind of print at an angle too.
Yeah, they do kind of print a little weird. Actually, no, it's even worse than I thought. It's $1,000.
Get a lot out of it, but I imagine you need a specific slicer for it.
That's a good question. I don't know if he uses Courier or not. So the other thing too with that is the space. You would need more space with the CR30 for sure. So that's probably something I'm probably not going to look at getting for a while. Because, honestly, I don't know that I'd print. I mean, kind of the one nice thing though with the print mill is like you can have it like just print the same thing over and over again. You know, so like if you're printing like a whole bunch of things, like Maker coins or something, you can just turn it on and just have it print a bunch of them. And I don't even think you have to slice it that way either, but you also have to use, like, if I switch to resin, the usual slicer is Shitubox. I think I said it right. And I definitely don't like it compared to Cura. I wish they'd figure out how to get the resin printers working with Cura. There might be a plug-in, but I haven't really honestly looked at it because I don't have one yet. So essentially, the resin printer would be smaller than either printer that I have now.
Smaller prints, but higher resolution.
Definitely. Like, yeah, I saw somebody posted a lithophane that they did on their resin printer. Man, does it look immaculate.
Yeah, that would probably be pretty hard to do on a resin printer, though.
Well, he did it like, you know, you always do those, even on a FDM printer like my CR10 or the Enders, you would usually do it on to stand up, you know, so basically, when it's done, it'd be standing up on the print bed. You don't want to print it lying flat because you're going to get a higher resolution by doing it standing up. All right.
Yeah, but if you even look at it funny, it's going to come off the bed.
Well, yeah. Well, you're going to want to do, at least on FDMs, you'll want to use a brim on it for sure. All right, and then just clean the brim off at the end. But the way he did it on the resin printer, now he said the first time he did it on the resin printer, he printed it the same way you would try to print it on an FDM, but it ended up breaking off. So what he's said and what others have said is you put it at a 30 degree angle on the Shitubox, and that also the because it prints upside down. Resin printers has the build plate in the air and it lowers that down into the vat of resin. Okay. You can do that and the support material is actually a lot better on a resin printer, because it basically just has to hold it. You know, it doesn't have to, you know, it's kind of for a different reason on a resin printer because of the different ways it prints. So you can tilt it at an angle and that usually, gets you enough resolution so it looks good and, doesn't fall off the printer as easily, you know, cause I think it'll have like a, whatever the resin printers does to keep it attached to the build surface. So, but, hey, and the resin printers would be cool because I print things like rings and stuff and they can be pretty detailed.
Yeah, probably a lot more cleanup too, though.
True. Well, then you also have to cure it. So you either have to have a UV light. Or stick it outside.
Larger prints need drain holes.
That too, yeah, because you don't want the resin to harden inside of it.
Or not hardening inside of it.
Right.
I have a question I'll throw out there. Well, it's kind of like I'm wavering here, with my wife being back in school and my youngest being back in school, and one of my daughters being in college, my wife said, we need to get a printer. And we're not going to go inkjet. I was looking at inkjets, and I'm like, to get a decent inkjet, you're already at the entry-level laser printer price. So I'm like, I'm trying to determine, like, figure out whether I want to just buy a new laser printer or go on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace, because I've been looking in places in Facebook and Craigslist, and there are some printers locally, and there's some that'll ship to you, and they have, you know, fairly decent seller ratings. So I'm like, I'm kind of torn. I'm not sure what I want to go with, because I guess, you know, you take that little bit of a risk with buying it used, that, you know, is it going to come with how soon is it you have to replace a toner cartridge, or is there some kind of problem with it that, you know, you're going to experience? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Definitely go the laser printer route if you can.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a laser printer, but I'm like, do I buy one off of Amazon new, or do I do Craigslist/Facebook Marketplace?
I haven't really had bad luck on Facebook Marketplace when it comes to that type of thing.
Right.
You have or haven't?
Have not had you bad luck. But it's all been pretty good luck so far.
In fact, you might be able to, you know, since you're going to go laser printer, you may be able to also get one with, like, an HP with a JetDirect card in it, so you can just hang it off the network.
Yeah, I mean, I've been looking at different ones. I haven't found any that had, like, the JetDirect card in it yet. And I haven't looked in depth. The thing is, most of them seem to be on the fairly older side, like a few years old.
Right.
But you're not really going to pick up new on the used market.
No.
Yeah, obviously not. And I get that. That's fine. But some of the newer ones, it's like, you know, they're already set up out of the box that you can print with Android or Chromebooks or anything like that. So I would have to probably, on some of the older ones, set it up where I would have to use one of my machines as a print server.
Right. See, that's one nice thing about, well, see, that's the other thing. I thought, didn't Google kill CloudPrint, I thought?
I don't know. Good question.
I don't remember, but that, like, I have the D110, that was sitting in my old home office. I actually have it plugged in, and I don't know if it actually works right now. It had a problem getting on the wireless network. So that's the other nice thing about some of the printers, even inkjet printers, you can connect them to wireless, depending on which printer you get, of course. But in your case, well, see, that's the other thing, too, is where they would want to put it, would you be able to get Ethernet there? You know, cause in your case, you're renting the place you live in, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, where I would put it would be down here where the Ethernet is.
Right. Okay.
And they can walk down the steps to the basement to get their printout, which is a lot better than having to either go to the neighbors or the library or, you know, pick your office superstore.
I can't imagine though that, so your wife's taking some college coursework?
Yes, she's taking a master's.
And they still want you to print the freaking paper out to bring it to them? You can't?
No. There's,
okay.
Well, so there's some things that she would like to print out, but like a few of the problems that we've had is that when filling out or doing any financial forms or stuff like that, we've had to print stuff out every freaking start of the semester. And it's been like going up to the neighbors or the library and having to print things out. And now there's other things that she's doing which would make it easier for her if she wants to print something out or whatever she wants to do with it, that if she could just do it from the house instead of having to go somewhere else to do it, it would be a lot more convenient, because it's becoming more than just that occasional printout that needs to be done. It's becoming more of like a regular basis. And it's one of those things where it's just enough that would warrant buying a printer, but not enough that, you know, when school's out and you have that long break, my experience with like inkjet printers has always been, if you don't use them on a regular basis, the ink starts to dry out, the heads get clogged, and you start running into problems. Now maybe they fixed that. I don't know. But every inkjet printer I've ever had has been a piece of shit. And the cost to replace the ink in those things is astronomically high.
Yeah, it's almost cheaper just to get another printer.
A lot of times, yeah.
And that's the thing, is I look online, I was just looking at prices on inkjets, and I remember you used to be able to get them like $30-$40. It seems like most of them are creeping up there in price towards like $100.
Yeah, well, I guess they probably suffered the same thing that the laptop market did last year, where everybody needed one, or a PC, and so the prices just shot through the freaking roof. Plus, you know, all the shortages going on right now with chips.
Right. And so it's like, I don't want to throw money down the inkjet hole again. When I got a laser printer that was used for like 5 or 6 years before I got it, and that thing lasted another 5 or 6 years.
Color laser printers, or are they all just black and white?
No, they make color, but you're going to spend a lot more money for color.
Yeah, the color lasers are god awful expensive.
Yeah, and then the toner cartridges. Yeah, you have to buy the red. What is it? The magenta, cyan, and see, cyan, magenta, yellow, I think, and black. So usually they have, I don't know, you could probably get a toner cartridge with all the colors in it. Although then you're getting, that's probably a low end one. Like most of the better color printer, laser printers I've seen, it's a separate cartridge. And then you're going to be, that's a pretty penny right there. So to answer your question, Joe, yes, but you're going to spend a lot more for it. But it'll work a hell of a lot better than an inkjet one ever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then the other thing, too, one I wish they always still made, and before I ended up getting rid of it, did end up working in Linux, and that's I had a MicroDry printer. Came out of, I believe, Japan. It was made by Alps. In fact, if you look in the, in Cups, you might see my name in the change notes, for when they added, that printer in there, because I was actually testing it in Linux and trying to get it to work in Linux. But, the neat thing with that is it had, it had ribbons, kind of like the old dot matrix, but it wasn't really the same thing. So essentially, it had the ink on a plastic ribbon, all right? So they didn't dry out, okay? And it basically just heated up the printhead and then melted that ink that's on the ribbon onto the paper. So they wouldn't smear. The other neat thing was, because of the unique way the technology was built, you can actually buy white ink to print on colored paper. All right, or for example, if you had the 5000 series, you could actually print your own decals on decal paper and you'd use the white ink to basically print on top of the clear decal paper, because if you didn't, you would basically see through whatever you're printing on the decal. But the neat thing was, those is they were, you know, they didn't, the ink didn't dry out, And you can do that and all sorts of weird things with it too. They even have metallic inks as well. But, they don't make those anymore. The last time they made them, they were still on Centronics, parallel ports, you know?
You know, I remember the cartridges for those at Staples, the Alps yep. ones. Yes, yep. I remember those, yes.
Yep. Oh, I have a
HP 5000 series, inkjet printer, and I've had it for a few years now, and it's actually worked pretty good.
Really? Right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember who. There was another.
How often do you print?
Well, you know, sometimes the same way with, you know, school stuff comes along and you're printing every other day, and then sometimes it sits there for a month or two. I think with those, like, the printhead is on the cartridge or something?
Yes. HP yep. has a printhead on the cartridge, yeah.
HP always did, yeah.
Right, so you're not worried about, you know, if it dries out, it's not that big a deal. Just replacing the ink cartridge and you're good to go.
Yep.
Except the ink cartridge is a little pricey.
Ink cartridge is a little pricey.
Yeah, the Canons had the printhead on the printer, and it was just, and those things would clog up all yeah. the time.
And same with the Epsons, too.
Yeah, Epson, yes. I'm sorry, go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, but I haven't had too much trouble with the ink cartridges drying out. I think it happened like once in the 3-odd years I've owned it. And the only other major issue that I have with it is that, you know, the three colors all come in a single cartridge. I'd rather they came in separate cartridges.
Separate cartridges, yeah.
Even if it added a little bit more cost overall when you had to buy all of them, it would still be better because, you know, I had to replace the cartridge not that long ago because I ran out of yellow or something.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You do the rest of them in there. You could have, like, tons of magenta or whatever.
Blue or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whatever they call it in the ink one.
But you run out of one of them, guess what?
You're
yeah.
Or if you run out of black and then it uses the color one for, and it uses all the colors in there to do yeah. black.
Oh, that's even worse.
Woo! Shoots right through that ink. It hits you right in the pocket, in the wallet right away.
Yeah. Yep.
I'll have to look at
my
Yeah, I'll have to look at the printer that my wife uses, which is probably the better printer of the two, because hers actually has the document feeder on the top for scanning. So you literally could just put the – what say you're making a photocopy. You can just walk up to it, put the – whatever you make a photocopy on the platinum, press a button, and it'll scan it and print it. But that one has separate ink cartridges as well. And I've tried knockoffs with HP printers. Don't bother. They usually don't work too well.
Yeah, I thought about going the refillable route where you yeah. take the NFC tag off of the regular cartridge and then you put it on their refillable cartridge and then just fill it up with various inks. But I've heard both good and bad reviews of it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of the computer, the company that made the printers with essentially solid ink in it. I think it was Tektronix, I thought.
And there was a company that made that Eternal Ink or something, or it was like a reservoir that sat on the side and actually held, you know, a good amount of all the different color of inks and then ran tubes to the inside. That was several years ago, though.
Yep, I think
they were more expensive because, you know, you weren't buying, or you weren't going back every few months to buy more ink.
I think it might be, I think Xerox might have bought them. Because I think that might be the one I'm thinking of, the Tektronix. Because it had basically its ink kind of looked like it was actually made out of wax, actually. So it would melt that down, kind of like a candle, and then print it. I have to remember, because it wasn't, I wouldn't call them a laser printer, because they weren't laser. you know. It just makes me wonder how much one of those costs now. Let's see the tech. Yeah, it's Xerox. So Xerox Tektronix Phaser 8200 DP color network printer refurbished is $529. It's normally $3,000. There, I'll put that in the mumble chat there.
Oy, oy, oy.
It's a little pricey, probably more than what you're wanting to pay, though.
How much is it?
$529.
Oh, yeah, that's a little on the pricey side.
Well, our friend Link moved to Lindsay, California from the San Diego area.
Wasn't that like 2 weeks ago?
Yep. He's in his new to him house. In Northern California.
Let's guess. Hope he's happy, right?
I think so. He's still living too.
Well, I mean, that's a good thing.
Well, it's not. See, that's kind of, you know, when you talk about moving. So, one of the reasons we did what we did with this house was we wanted to be able to do as much of the move ourselves as we possibly can. In a few more years, that ain't gonna happen. you know, I'm 50, my wife's 54. So it's like, you know, we're no longer spring chickens.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yep. That's like we're talking about that today, and one of the calls we had like sidetracked, like you know, remember the movie Never Ending Story? You know they're doing another movie too.
I wouldn't surprise. Well, it never ends, so of course they can do
it. Is it a continuation or is it a reboot?
I think it's a continuation.
Well, there were a whole bunch of books. But I know that, the fourth movie, like, completely went off the rails from the books.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, I have to look and see if there's going to be. Yeah, I thought there was going to be another one. But
maybe there was, but then it got bagged.
Could be. Well, that's like the Top Gun movie. Has it come out yet?
I don't know.
Probably, but it probably sucked.
I like the direction they were going with that one, because Maverick was going to be the teacher since.
It's coming out on the 19th or 21st, 19th of November.
Okay,
all right. Oh, they got Val Kilmer to come out of retirement.
Oh, dude, he looks horrible now. Have you seen him?
He had like throat cancer or something, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they took out his larynx, so he can't talk. But he also is very heavy compared to where he was in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But then, one of my favorite of the Christian film music or Christian movie makers, their new movie is coming out in a couple weeks. Actually, next week. They're basically re-rolling a movie they already made out, but they filmed some new scenes in it. So that's interesting. It's called Courageous Legacy. But I may want to go see that, but I haven't seen either the Shang-Chi or Black Widow yet.
Well, Shang-Chi is theaters right now.
Right.
I don't think it's out on digital yet, so.
No, I think it's supposed to be next month. You know, I can't get excited about that one. Black Widow, a little bit more, since she's more major character than Shang-Chi was.
I love, you know, Shang-Chi. I didn't see the
I'm
movie.
Sure you did.
My kid, no, I didn't see it. I loved the character. My
right.
Two of my daughters saw it, but I did not go because my youngest isn't vaccinated yet. So I wish I could go. I would definitely go, but I'm looking forward to it coming out. But I heard it. They said it was really good.
I will say this: I did break down, and last night I watched Star Trek Lower Decks on Paramount Plus. That's actually not as bad as I thought it would be.
That's that anime.
That's the animated one. It's an adult animation, so it's not definitely not. Necessarily kid friendly, although it's not horrible, you know. It's kind of like I don't know, you know, but it is pretty funny. But yeah, you know, so, and I think, and actually it's kind of funny too, they got who they got to do some of the voices. So like some of the main characters you probably never heard of, although I question Boimler, Enta Boimler, who's one of the main characters, one of the Lower Deck crew. I think the last name of the guy is Quaid, not Randy Quaid, but I think it might be his son, maybe? I don't know. But, the first officer is played by Jerry O'Connell, Don Lewis, who was from, Different World. She does the voice for the captain. And there are other famous people. I don't know. I know. I want to say I thought Jonathan Frakes did a voice for his character. And I know they had Janeway come into the series too. As Admiral Janeway, I think. But it's pretty funny. I liked what I've seen thus far. I started in season one. They currently have two seasons out. And then they did release the trailer for Picard season two, where Q's coming back. And it looks like there's going to be some time travel in season two. Because apparently somehow the Federation has turned into a fascist regime. And you see, it makes me wonder if they actually crossed into the mirror universe. I don't know. We'll find out, I guess. But Picard was pretty good. I liked it.
Wait.
I've seen all they had so far.
Season 2 of Picard didn't come out, right?
No, it's not. No. February 22nd. Not 22nd, shit. February 2022.
Okay.
So, I'm pretty sure they do have a specific day, but, and they don't, I think they like Discovery are also releasing like one a week.
Right.
So, and I think, actually I think, the Orville's gonna come out, their third season soon, which is gonna be on Hulu versus Fox.
Makes sense. Alright guys, it's that time.
Yep.
Yeah, we gotta wrap it up.
I'm super tired. I'll talk to y'all next week.
Alright, yes, I'm gonna play us out. Here we have your promos and shorts.
Oh my god. It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
I am short.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up.
Shut up.
Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
I love it that it's in there.
There you go. You know, I gotta be honest with you, Joe, I feel a little weird playing it, like,
right
the end there.
Right next to that clip. Yeah. It kind of weirds me out a little bit, too.
I'm like, I don't know where to put it, because if I put it on the other side, then we got the sushi, and everybody is like, all right. Maybe I should play it before the promos. It wouldn't be so weird.
Shoot. I was just searching to find out if they had an actual release date for season 3. It says it'll air in February 22 or around that time. So that can mean January, that can mean December. Who freaking knows?
Alright guys.
Yeah, I gotta stop the recording. So.
Yeah.
Boom. Oh,
tomorrow's bachelor night. So Joel gets to go eat what he wants.
I need to adjust that because I don't need to know everything my alarm system does, especially if somebody's home.
No, actually, I didn't hear it. What's it sound like?
Just a standard Android notification. One thing I need to figure out is there a way for me to have that alarm go on at a certain time of night? Because last night I completely forgot to turn it on.
You forgot to turn it on?
Yeah.
You know what? I don't think that there is in Android proper, I don't think that exists, but I do believe there's an application that allows you to do stuff like that.
Jesus, I almost hit a deer.
Poor deer.
There's a deer.
Hey, what's up, Joe? What's up, Pat?
There you go.
Yeah, my headlights, and I wasn't going that fast because I'm on a.
He's saying something. He said.
I said, I'm on a country road.
Old Town Road.
I'll be on my normal road. Yeah. Normal setup here in a little bit. I'm on the the last major road until I turn into where the houses are.
All right. Okay. This is the way. The way is 9:22.
The way.
Yep. How far are you from home?
I'm turning the last road in before I turn into the development.
And then how far do you have to go?
Holy cow.
And then how far?
It's just a bit down just main road here. And hopefully, so basically my next turn.
They got him again.
Sounds good.
Not only is he feeding back, there's a delay,
Is there a delay?
This is delay. This is a delay of you feeding Boogie. Yeah. Woo! All right. Hey, Pat.
What's up, man?
Yeah, while waiting for Joel to get into his house. I forget what it's called now, but did you see the that video Iron Maiden put out a couple weeks ago? I was meaning to ask you.
Oh yeah, the new album came out. They got two singles, Writing on the Wall, and then Stratego. The Stratego one is like more anime looking. It's like Japanese.
Yeah, I love that. That was awesome.
It's a good song.
Yeah, it is.
Good album. It's a double album. It's really good.
Yeah, I gotta pick that up. Support the artists that I like.
Those guys are fucking awesome, man. They still sell out fucking stadiums around the world. And they're still putting out really good new music, you know?
Yeah, they put on an awesome show, man.
Yeah, I've seen them a bunch of times. I definitely want to see them again before they retire. Who knows how many more albums and tours they got in them, you know?
Yes.
You know, Bruce Dickinson had cancer, and he supposedly got over it, but... You know how that shit goes.
Well, man, he blows me away when he just sprints from one end of the stage to the other without missing a beat and singing the whole way. I mean,
he sounds great on the new album. He sounds phenomenal on the new album.
He is there, so
still great.
You hear that, Joe? Get your tickets.
I'll do that.
For the Sticky Wickets.
Yeah.
Are they free?
No, probably not.
Nope. Can't get them then.
For you.
Awesome. I'm going.
Are they touring right now? Yes. Wait.
Go Maiden?
Yeah.
No, they're not touring now. They're going to hold off until the springtime, I think.
Yeah, they're starting in June of 2022.
All right, I'll be back in a bit. Go ahead and start.
Thank you for your permission. Thank you for your.
I'm not giving permission. I'm totally into it anyway.
Well, unless you want to fly to Europe, we're not going to be seeing them in the summer so far, unless August is when they're going to head on over here.
Yeah, who knows? I'll go see them. I've lost track how many times I've seen them live. They're a great band.
All right, let's start the show. Joel already monopolized our audio.